Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island Beer Company, a Chicago craft brewery that works to innovate new ways to brew and age beer. More at gooseisland.com. You don't need to be the only beer you drink. We just want to be the best beer you drink.
This is Sound Opinions, and we'll have our DJ mix sets for 2017 in a bit. But first, Greg, we have to pay tribute to some of the people we've lost this year. Many of the biggest names we covered: Tom Petty, Chuck Berry, Fats Domino, Grant Hart, Walter Becker, Greg Allman, Chris Cornell, Maggie Roche. Still, despite the length of that sad list, there are others we have not gotten to.
Yeah, we couldn't get to them all, Jim. Some of these artists were so important to us and to our listeners and to music that we couldn't leave the year without paying some kind of tribute to them. I want to start off with what I consider one of the most underrated musicians of all time. I mean, it may be impossible to think that you could be in a band that sold 200 million records and be almost anonymous. But that's the role that Malcolm Young gladly played in AC/DC. I mean, he was one of the architects of that band. He was one of the founding members. He was one of the key songwriters. He was obviously a great guitar player in tandem with his brother. But it was his brother, Angus, who got most of the accolades. And this is second in line would have been the lead vocalist, the original lead vocalist in the band, Bon Scott, followed by Brian Johnson. Malcolm loved to sit in the shadows on stage and in a recording studio. But if Angus was the flash in the band, Malcolm was the backbone. Mm-hmm. He was the guy that delivered the riffs. I would say, and many people have said this as well, the greatest rhythm guitar player in rock and roll history, certainly one of the top five, I would say, just by the sheer length of the records that he created over the decades. I mean, the hits, the songs that he was a key to, those songs couldn't be imagined without Malcolm's riffs at their core. The whole notion of Angus Young being the lead guitarist in the band is a little bit misstated, because Malcolm played a key role in playing those counterpoint melody lines against Angus's leads. They were trading riffs very often in songs, so it was very difficult at times to determine where Angus started and Malcolm left off. But Angus was obviously the guy who was wearing the schoolboy beanie and the knickers, and he was getting all the attention. Malcolm was very content to be the guy in the background. I want to play a song from their golden era, the 70s, the era when Bon Scott was the lead vocalist. Obviously, they had million-selling albums after that, selling out stadiums, but I think the core of their catalog was recorded in the 70s. Here's a song from the Power Age album called Riff Raff that isn't necessarily one of their biggest hits, but I think really speaks to the dialogue that Malcolm Young and Angus Young had as guitar players. Here is Riff Raff from AC/DC on Sound Opinions. Riff Raff from AC/DC in tribute to the great Malcolm Young, who died on November 18th at the age of 64. Jim, what have you got next?
Greg, I've said before on the show that power pop is a genre that often gets overlooked, by rock critics, certainly in terms of sales, ironically, for a music that's supposed to be popular. Mm-hmm. Taking this idea that starts with the Beatles of exuberant, chiming guitars and glorious hooks and melodies and harmonies and just reveling in the songcraft. We lost two greats in the power pop world this year. Pat DiNizio was a guy I knew from New Jersey. I saw the Smithereens, his band, perhaps a dozen times over the years. They put out 11 albums between 1986 and 2011. He died at the age of 62 on December 12th. I just love his story. He started out working as a garbage man in Jersey. He wound up, after winning some measure of fame, especially locally, running for Senate. Unsuccessfully. Mm-hmm. He called his campaign Mr. Smithereen Goes to Washington. He didn't. He lost. But he was in there fighting and writing incredible songs. I think the two biggest hits the Smithereens ever connected with were Blood and Roses and A Girl Like You, all based in the Beatles. They'd later go on to do a whole album of Beatles covers. They would also do a cover of Tommy by The Who. Wonderful example of the best of power pop. Girl, you said anything at all. Also a power pop great, Tommy Keene. He was born here in Illinois, in Evanston, but is best known for living and growing up in the Maryland area just outside of D.C. When, you know, people like Fugazi were reinventing punk in the hardcore Washington, D.C. scene, Tommy was there with his guitar chiming away. Again, you know, chiming. That's the sound. It's the sound that would inspire R.E.M., and they'd ride it to the arenas. But the Smithereens and Tommy Keene were doing it in the clubs. And they were, you know, in many ways, journeymen, professionals, gigging night after night, releasing albums. For Tommy, it was 12 records between 1982 and 2015, never making tons of money. But they were big champions, both Pat DiNizio and Tommy Keene, of other musicians. And they shared the stage with so many greats who went on to bigger and better, much beloved, both of them, by musicians they met, who met them on the way up, you know. And their discographies are great with wonderful songs. I think Tommy's was most best-known song was Places That Are Gone. Now you're finding your That's a little Tommy Keene, dead at the age of 59 on November 22nd.
Jim, I want to shift 180 degrees from power pop to the almost exact opposite side of the music spectrum, at least in the kind of music that we're interested in, and go to free jazz. You know, ultra-melodic power pop, and now we have music that some people call completely amelodic.
Atonal noise.
And noise, right.
Yeah.
But I think that's a gross misunderstanding of what's going on here. Truly adventurous style of music that still divides the audience in terms of whether they can even listen to it. And I think that makes it all the more powerful because it's such a strong statement about the African-American experience, particularly in the way that they were turning this music, trying to search for beauty amid this massive landscape of ugliness. Taking away, the art form from the tyranny of the form itself, the traditional form, chords, time, melody, even in many cases, and finding this kind of free expression that was explosive, very dissonant at times, and at times incredibly beautiful in the way that the voices would come together on these instruments. One of the founding members of the whole concept of free jazz was the pianist Cecil Taylor. And in 1960, he brought a drummer into the fold, Sonny Murray. And that's who I want to pay tribute to here. Sonny Murray died December 7th in Paris, where he lived most of the last part of his life. Murray was a young guy who really, in Cecil's estimation, didn't really know what he was doing, but he had the spirit. That's what he said. You've got the spirit. And he heard and saw something in Sonny Murray's playing that made him want to work with him. They did several recordings in the 60s, and Murray went on to work with the giants of the free jazz sound, the Art Ensemble of Chicago, David Murray, Albert Eiler. He worked with all the greats, but Cecil Taylor was kind of his ground zero. They recorded a live record in Copenhagen, Denmark in 1962 that is considered a jazz classic. Nefertiti, The Beautiful One Has Come. And I want to give you an example of what Murray and Taylor in particular did together in this excerpt from the song What's New. It basically, although Jimmy Lyons is in the band as well, the saxophonist is a great trio that Cecil Taylor had. The dialogue here is between Murray on drums and Taylor on piano, and you can hear this the search for beauty amid the ugliness in this song. It's What's New from Sonny Murray and Cecil Taylor on Sound Opinions. Cecil Taylor's What's New on Sound Opinions with the great Sonny Murray on drums. Sonny Murray dead at the age of 81 on December 7th.
One more person to pay tribute to, Greg, that we didn't get to, Sylvia Moy. Unique in the annals of the great studio backing crews by being a songwriter at Motown during its height. Here's a woman who grew up in Detroit. Her dad was an appliance repairman, and she used to make toy instruments at home by trying to play piano on the radiator and making drums out of boxes. She left Detroit and went to New York to try to become a Brill Building style songwriter. She had no success, so she came back to Detroit and got invited to work at Motown, where there were not a lot of women behind the scenes. She wrote songs, sometimes in collaboration with Henry Cosby, who was a producer. Some of them were recorded by the Isley Brothers, Martha and the Vandellas, Marvin Gaye. But most famously, she clicked with Stevie Wonder. We forget that little Stevie, you know, after becoming quite a phenomenon at age 13, had a bit of a slump, and it wasn't clear that he was going to go on to become one of the most significant Motown artists, one of the most significant artists, period, ever. And it was with Sylvia's help that he got there. She wrote a song that was inspired by her parents' love affair, I Was Made to Love Her. She wrote or co-wrote Never Had a Dream Come True, Uptight, Everything's All Right, and My Sharia Moore. Mm. What a beautiful tune. La 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 la.
Ma chérie, oh more lovely as a summer day. Ma chérie, oh more distant as the Milky Way.
That's My Sharia Moore. Sylvia Moy wrote it. Stevie Wonder immortalized it. Sylvia died at the age of 78 on April 15th.
That's a great pick. Now we want to hear from you, the listeners. Which musicians that died this year are you mourning? Call and leave a message on our hotline, 888-859-1800. Coming up, Jim and I are going to play excerpts from our 2017 mixtapes. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.